Well, it sounds like I'm on air then. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon. Let me just turn off this this stuff here. Yeah, there we go. And welcome to Journeys with JP here on Revolution Radio Studio B. And, oh, it didn't work. Rodrigo Soto is doing something very clever with my, my web server right now. And, we'll see what happens. It hopefully will give me some spare time that I may go on holiday somewhere. So anyway, where was I? Oh yeah. We were bulldozing the garden. Yeah, Sean was all over the place, but I was bulldozing the garden and digging down into the earth, moving stones, you know, trimming bushes. It was a real, it was a very physical thing. My feet are killing me because I got bone fragments in them, and when I carry heavy things, they just kind of bite in. Anyway, long story, short ending. Good evening. It's the 22nd of August, almost Leo, no, almost Virgo, just on the cusp of Virgo. So, all right. Well, if anybody wants to kind of, so Virgo is the last sign of the personal, signs. It goes 6 months and 6 months. So Aries to Virgo is the personal, and then, Libra to Pisces is the collective. So, this is the connection between, it's like on one side, it's about me, and on the other side, it's about us. So you can see that one side is about ego and the other side is about soul. And so, Aries to Virgo, you develop the ego. And from Libra to Pisces, you calm it down again. And yeah, as you know, so as a corollary to what Sean was talking about, there's some very interesting connections between the tarot and the year of astrology. I might try and look for it during a break. And I don't know if I've still got it. But it was a book that I came across years and years ago, and it showed one very strange, well, it wasn't strange. It was just, wow, I'd never thought about that, but it all fit together. That the tarot deck, can be divided. So there's 52 cards in the regular playing pack. And that relates, as you know, to the 52, weeks of the year. But the tarot deck is a long time older than that. And we didn't necessarily have 52 weeks in a year. We had different numbers of rotations to the orbit because orbits were different and rotations were different and planetary sizes were different. And so things haven't always been the same. So when you say like 1,000 years ago, you could probably say, yeah, but like 5,000 years ago, the planets changed position and pole shifts and all that, and it slowed down and and the orbits changed and things like that. There are star charts from ancient times that show that the position of the stars was different to the way it is today. You know, in fact, the Earth was rotating the other way. Now, that would be a bit of a strange thing. That's actually one of the prophecies of the Hopis. Is that the Earth will one day return to its correct rotation. Yeah, let that sink in a little bit. That the Earth will one day return to its correct rotation. So, if you're thinking about, like, a pole shift, what would make a magnetic pole shift but a reversal in the direction of the motor? So, you know, people think the pole shift might mean it goes, like, it flips up or down. But really, the sun and the earth and all the planets are kind of, they're bobbing magnetically, north and south. You know, we align with the north and south of the sun. And that's like the heliosphere. And we all sit in the central diameter of the heliosphere, where it's neither too positive or too negative in the magnetic field. And so we all align. Anyway. So, yeah, 52 weeks in a year, these days. Now, back in the old days, there were 360 days in a year, which very nicely divided down into 12s and all this stuff. And they called that the Golden Age because everything kind of fitted in. That came to an end about 800 BC, 2800 years ago. This is according to, by the way, I get my information from a scholar called Emmanuel Velikosky. Hey, you can look him up, V-E-L-I-K-O-S-K-Y. He used to wow people in the old days. He was a contemporary of Einstein and all of these people, and Tesla and another clever chap. And he looked at all the different records of astronomy. Astronomy is not astrology. Astronomy just names and positions the planets. Astrology then determines angles and geometry from that to define a character to the times. I think that's the best way of putting it. And so there's astrology and astronomy, but the records have said that there are things that had happened. And he studied, I think he studied Chinese and African and South American, Peruvian, all these things. As much as he could, and gathered all the historical records about what they've said about the heavens, what's been going on. And indeed, there seemed to be this time in the memory of, now I can't remember what people it was, but it was in the Peruvian side of things, where they said that the sun rose twice on one day. And one day it rose in the east and one day it rose in the west. Or rather, one day it rose in the west, set again, and then rose in the east and continued to rise in the east. And this moment seems also to correspond with the same moment where there's and it's in the Old Testament Bible that there's a point when the sun stayed in the sky during a battle and the sun remained up. And essentially this is the same event from a different point of view, from the opposite point of view. Rather than the sun setting, it rose and then kind of reset itself and went back the other way, didn't set it. It went across the sky. Anyway, this was back in the days it used to go, so it rose in the east, no, it rose in the west and went about, till its zenith, and then went back down and set in the west again. And that must have been a strange day. And probably a lot of people thought that the world would end. Now, my personal theory, I've not heard anybody talk about this because nobody else, generally, your scholars, your scientific scholars don't accept that the Earth can be anything else but a round, a spherical disc that is like in a machine that always travels at the same thing on a flat disc around the sun. That's it. There's no, possibilities that we could all be kind of floating in a medium and quite easily jiggled around, and things can speed up and slow down and grow and shrink. And really, oh my God, my throat today is terrible. I'm going to have to get some honey. Some shungite water. Let me just drink some shungite water here. Excuse me there. I'll have to talk about the shungite water later. That's a very interesting thing. So back in the days, there were 360 days between years instead of 365, because there was an event that happened at 2800 years ago, or 800 BC, which was about the beginning of the Roman Empire, the nascence of the Roman Empire, is that Mars actually kind of went flying by, came close enough to have a few enormous electrical lightning bolts that that basically kind of left some scars on the face of the planet, and we don't recognize them as that, but there is something that appears to be a volcanic lake up in Italy. There used to be a town there, and this bolt just went, and then, you know, imagine a planetary lightning bolt. You know, the electrical charge between two planets is such that one will discharge to another, giving a close enough from proximity to make an ionic trail like a lightning bolt. And this was one that went from one planet to another as the other planet passed by. Now, gravitational push, the gravity field of a planet stops it from banging into each other, but they do kind of discharge and crackle as they go past. And, you know, one of those little crackles is a, you know, how much would it be? You know, a couple of half a million miles, is that? I don't know. Hundreds of, maybe certainly dozens of thousands of miles between two planets with a great big lightning bolt between them. And no wonder they called Mars the god of thunder and war, and were very inspired by it, by the power of it. And thus the founding of Rome, and its almost eternal domination on this planet ever since. Anyway, yeah, I wonder if anybody's listening. I don't know if anybody cares. Let's see if I can find the chat rooms here at Wolf Spirit. Yes, Odell and Elodia. So yes. Wow. Okay. Hello, everybody. I'm there in the chat room. What star sign people? I should get, alright, so, hello everybody in the chat room. Yes, Ophiuchus. Yes, what's this? Who you can hear now? Your volume is straining to hear. Perhaps you should turn your volume up. Yes, so, where are we now? So 360 days was the orbit of the planet. Between about 3600 BC, 1500 BC, 1600 BC, and 800 BC. And they called that the golden age of astrology because everything fitted and the mathematics was so easy. And there were 360 days for every cycle, and it just everything was perfect and everybody liked it, and they all walked around in robes going, oh. And then Mars came along, and in this enormous lightning covered spectacle, it dragged the Earth a little bit out of its orbit and added 5 days to the orbit, which is why we now have 365 and a quarter days. So it's all out of harmony. It's not that, like, it'd be interesting if anybody has ever done it to make a what that would sound like if that was an acoustic thing. Oh my. Yes. Oh, indeed. Keith, why don't you come on? And let's bring him in. Because he wanted to ask me some questions, so why not do it on air and see if we can get that going. So, yeah, we're going to have Keith Roberts. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, I didn't expect you to call me. Yes, I'm doing fine. How are you, sir?
You know what it's like. If I'm on the air and you type a message to me, you're going to get called in. It's, you
warned.
Basically ask for it, you know, that's it. Hi, bro,
well,
how are
pleasure.
You?
I'm doing very well.
So, you had a couple of...
Enjoying your conversation.
Yeah, so...
Go ahead.
So, so have you heard about this before, this idea?
Yes, I have. I've read Velikovsky's
right.
work.
Yeah. So you're familiar with the ideas. All right, so I'm just going to crack on a little bit, and then we can chat about it. But over the about 3,600 years ago was the time of what we know in the Old Testament Bible as the Exodus, and that's the time of Moses and the whole 10 plagues and the seven this and the, you know, and all this stuff. So basically, what the 10 plagues were, this is according to Velikovsky, which Keith is aware of, is that essentially Venus, appearing as a comet, passes into our solar system and gets captured by the orbit of the sun, and everything, again, jiggles around. And as it goes past, this is the moment that I was talking about, it grabs the Earth in its magnetic field and stops it from spinning, and actually starts it spinning the opposite way. And then it leaves, you know. So, you know, it just, Venus came in and totally changed my life. She turned me around. Yeah, literally. So when that happened, obviously there was a lot of devastation on the Earth, and this was the time when the Arabic Sea, the Pacific, the Indian Ocean, was drawn towards this thing as it went past, and it drew up the sea, and you know, in the middle of it, and obviously it drew the waters, the coastlines away, and it left a land bridge. And you can actually see it, and it's at the bottom of Saudi Arabia. No, what am I talking about? It's the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula, and it actually goes across to Saudi Arabia to a place where it's called Medina, which is the fabled early childhood place where, you know, it wasn't so Arabic, you know, but it wasn't so zoned out. There are all these different places, and it was much more, the communities were smaller. And, so, yeah, so it was more mixed. unlike, you know, we have all the Kurds are over there and all the this are over there. Everybody was living there. Anyway, meanwhile, well, everybody was wandering around trying to find somewhere safe because this, you know, there are all these, the plagues, right, so what the plagues were the effect of the solar wind drawing off the outer atmosphere of the planet as it passed us. And as it passed us, different layers were boiled off, and so we're basically passing into the tail of a comet, and that's what happened. Those were the 10 plagues, because, well... the comet was a piece of Maldek, I think, and and really it was full of all sorts of stuff. Maldek had bits of, you know, it had oceans and things, and it had life, lots of life, you know, humanoid life as well, and a lot of people died. Yeah, it was another trauma, another big trauma. We haven't finished the Lyran trauma. We've got to deal with the Maldek trauma. I've actually had sessions with people who were on Maldek when it was destroyed, and what happened to them and all these things.
I swear I remember it.
You do?
I remember a huge explosion in the sky, planetary. I think it was what created the asteroid belt, and I think I was on Mars, but I'm not sure. But the memory is really clear about the event.
Okay. Do you know this story?
No, I'm fascinated. Please continue.
All right. Well, the story of Maldek. Now, I've been doing a show with a gentleman called Win Keech. Okay, Win... he's a friend of Simon Parks. He lives in Whitby, near him. And when he went for a reading with Simon or something, he said, "Oh, you're a Pleiadian." Yeah, really. And, you know, all these memories. So he remembers a lot of things. And he remembers being on the attack team. Okay, so do you want me to tell you the story of the destruction of planet Maldek by the Pleiadians?
I would love it.
Okay. A long, long, hang on, no, I don't want to read the manual online, hang on, no. Just cancel that. Let's try. Where's my harp? Where's my time machine? There we go. traveling back in time. All right, so this is about 100 million years ago, but time is a bit irrelevant because everything was involving time travel. So before that, Lyra was invaded. A whole bunch of people got killed. A whole bunch of people got captured. A whole bunch of people escaped. A whole bunch of people phased out in dimensionally. And there was an enormous diaspora, which is a spreading out. And it was incredibly traumatic for everybody because everybody was telepathically connected. You know, no matter what race, color, being they were, everybody was connected. And so when the Draco reptilians came in and destroyed four of their planets, it was very, very traumatic. You know, a lot of people didn't know what was going on, you know, and couldn't respond. So one bunch decided, and this is probably afterwards, and I don't really know the whole story, but and I still need to be, you know, I need to take myself back there again. But I felt the impulse of it, and I knew exactly what we, you know, what that impulse would do if I was in that position. So.
You're cueing memories in me, by the way.
Good. So one group went to the Pleiades, but not in this time, but in the future when there are no reptilians around. And there created the Pleiadian super soldier, who is that famous tall blonde. Right, it's somebody who can deal with reptilians, somebody who the reptilians will be scared of, the Jason Bourne of Dragon Slayers, and once everybody was trained, now Wynn told a story is when he was born on in Pleiades, when you know in this lifetime, he was born as a soldier. When they were very tiny, they took a small sample of their brain cells and cultured it and embedded that into the AI of the ship that they were going to fly. So as the child grew, so did the ship. And they grew to be one. So that's how they used to fly the ships. No steering wheel. And there were, now he has also said that the ships had kind of drone ships that would fly with them, you know, so one ship would position itself, you know, to the right, one to the left, etc. And they would all fly as a unit, and then presumably fan out when necessary. But it's all driven by the AI that was connected to the pilot of the main ship. So this is the Pleiadian system. The plan was, and it really feels like that whole, you know, the plan was, now the AI infested reptilians, the Dracos, right? Draconians. We hear about, you know, draconian measures. Yeah, that's because they're our overlords, right? And they're mean, you know, and they're arrogant and they're very proud. And this is, you know, this is the all right, anyway. They're mean, arrogant, and proud. Okay? And they don't like humans either, and they're over-aggressive. You know? They, actively are aggressive in, you know, in that they will, just go around bullying people for the sake of it.
Yeah? They like the taste of humans.
And they like the taste of human flesh, you know, because it's sweet to them. Especially because if they can make us feel fear. Because it's like, you know, veal, you know, or pâté de foie gras. If you distress the creature, the food tastes sweeter. Yeah. Anyhow. So, the plan. Time, now, remember, the Pleiadians are in the future, so they time travel back. How do they do it? They use the sun. They used the sun as a time-traveling device. Bet you didn't know that. Well, maybe you did.
A portal.
Yeah. So, they use the sun. They go back in time. and exit about 100 million years ago. Also, Mars was populated at the time, and there are a large number of people who were there who are here. Some people say it's the Muslims. Anyway. So, Mars was a moon of Maldek. And on Mars, there was an early warning base. You know, the forward warning base. And the plan was to, first of all, take out the early warning base with an EMP, which would blind Maldek to the big bunker buster that was headed also in the fleet. And there was an evacuation of some people from Mars. But a lot of people lost their lives because, and here's the thing. Now, you're only supposed to blow the bloody base up. No. What happened was, there must have been some exotic weaponry in there or something. The worst possible set of circumstances happened. And instead of... Right, so they were trying to hold back this sector. There was a reptilian base on Maldek, and they were using it as a base of operations, and that was their key strength. And so they decided they would blow that base up. But the base was the whole, sort of basically the inside of the whole planet. And so when they used the bunker buster to, ostensibly destroy the base, some chain reaction, but it blew the planet to smithereens. Now, you may ask, what about the plan to send the EMP to Mars to blindside Maldek? Well, that kind of worked, but again, it went wrong. Now, because Mars, I believe, this is, again, conjecture, but I believe Mars had been fracked. And the sea was covered in oil. And when the EMP weapon was deployed, instead of being an EMP, it set the atmosphere alight. And a lot of people died, and it was tragic. It was a terrible, terrible thing. And it's one of the things that, that has incurred a lot of karma for Pleiadians, and also the hatred of Pleiadians by the Martians. So, what's your, what's coming back to you, Keith?
Well, first of all, when you said that the Mars was a moon of Mardek, it totally clicked with me, because what I saw was not like if you were looking at, say, Mars or Venus in the night sky, this distant flash or something. No, it was like really big. The whole sky lit up, and you could see the planet. I mean, because it's, you're a moon of a planet, so it's dominating the sky there. There's a lot of emotion. It's going to take you're really keying some things. It's what happens for me is like the memories slowly start to come back. I can't force it, especially with the emotional quotient with it. But that all fits. I know something. I think you're absolutely correct.
Well, it's unfolding, and I have to hand it to all of my friends who I've been working with and through and for in the last year or so, 18 months. And as this is this is material that is so personal and so global at the same time and so galactic at the same time. It's quite something. And I just have to keep sharing every little bit that I get, because every time I do a show like this, I get feedback. See, people saying, wow, that made some more drop into place for me. I now understand who I am. I now know what I want, and stuff like that.
Well, and it is a trauma. And so healing trauma gets us more in the present.
Absolutely.
We get a little piece of ourselves back, or a huge piece. The other thing that strikes me is, you know, time seems kind of like a localized event. I don't know how to explain it, but to say traveling a million years in the future or in the past, it seems to me time is more relevant. And this is just my own intuition or feeling. When you say they traveled in the future, it almost seems like they left a dimension to another dimension. There is relevance to the future and past, but it's not linear, as we may think of it in my viewpoint is all.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's easier to explain something in terms of going backwards and forwards in time than it is talking about dimensionality for the moment.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So,
yeah, sure.
Yes, you're right. But let's say they time travel.
For the sake of the conversation,
yeah.
I got you.
Let's say they time travel because it's much easier to conceive.
Well, because, it's also true.
Yeah. All right. So, here's the thing. So, they went back in time. They did the job. But it wasn't all, that there were Dracos here. And so there was a team that came down. Now, he was talking about canines. Canines. Basically the Canon, K-N, like Ken. Yeah? Kenneth. They're dog people. Yeah? They're from Sirius. And they're like wolfmen, and reptilians are crap scared of them. And there were some skirmishes on this planet as well, on Earth. And I think when last night said, you know, everybody died, you know, who was on here, you know, who came here. I still don't know the rest of the story. Because my story kind of starts there as well. This is all years ago. Tracy Kennedy did me a reading with her tarot cards, and
really?
took me. I had no idea about this story. Right, it's really interesting. Because she was just like, this is what's going to happen. And I said, let's do some past lives. You need to do past lives. Yeah, all right, yeah. So I said, okay, so go back a couple of lives. So eventually we went back a few lives and various things, you know, lady in the woods, with a big cat in Ireland and, people would come to me and, I got burnt at the stake, you know, all that stuff. typical thing. And that, I said, go back, you know. So eventually I went, look, go back. When's the first time I appeared on this planet? And she told this story, and she said, oh, wow. She said, oh, the first thing she said, oh, they left you behind. Really? And by the way, this is before I had heard anything about Pleiadians or Lyrans or this or that. Oh, I'd heard about Pleiadians because they was a guest of the ninth dimensional collective of the Pleiadians. Being channeled by Nora Herald or something. Anyway, so she did this reading and she said, they left you behind. Really? Three came through the sun. They came from the future. Yeah. They came, they left you. They blew up a planet. There's a series of images that she was getting, and she never heard of this story, and, you know. I told this story to a few friends, and I thought, well, that's a weird way of arriving. Anyway, so here I am. One of them said, oh, you should check out Michael Tesarian. He tells this story. I said, really? Is this a real story? She said, yeah, check it out. So it's written in the Vedas that there were a group who came from the sun and came through the sun and destroyed the planet and went away again. And they didn't mention anybody left behind or anything. But anyway, there seems to be this connection between that event and my arrival. And whenever I've heard anyone talk about it, I've tried to get them on my show. And that's how I got into meeting Simon Parks and his friends. And a lot of his, you know, a lot of people in his collecting consciousness group.
His sphere.
His sphere. Well, it's not really his. You know, he started it, but, you know, it's kind of autonomous and it's doing its thing. You know, there's all these different people from different races and different star systems and different, different sides of the coin. You know, we're here to make peace. We are here on this planet to stop this war, to be the end of this war. Right? And we've learned one thing. Oh, we've all learned one thing. Number one, for reptilians, not to mess with humans again. And for humans, not to see reptilians as your enemy, but as your teacher. And, eventually we, you can't beat us. You have to let us. And eventually the reptilians will have to say, okay, you win. And it's the worst thing in the world for them to say that. Nobody's ever made them do that. And they won't admit it, but we're here and we're right. You know, because we're ascending and they're not.
I said last night on my show, I said, there is no enemy. And of course immediately got into a lot of trouble. But it is very high, you know, that's the highest, level to approach it at, because, you take all the energy out of it.
Mm. Mm. Well, I mean, people, often use it as a kind of platitude. Oh yeah, at the end of the day, it's all, you know, we're all one and all this stuff. And in a way that you can, it's sometimes it's it takes the energy out, it takes the heart out of it. Disheartening, because sometimes we need a bit of traction. We need the polarity. We need somebody kicking our ass for us to go, ow, because we needed to make a shout. We need to make our voice work. So if somebody makes us go, ow, how about saying, well, this is what I think. This is my feeling. You know,
we needed some
find
movement.
Your voice. How to find your voice. Somebody will kick your ass and you will squeak, or you can just start talking. You take a deep breath in through your nose and just start talking. Because that's what we've been trained not to do. For thousands and thousands of years in this suffocating draconian world. So we've come to the end of that now. So Keith.
Sir.
When I got this reading, I, you know, it was like, I do recognize the feeling of feeling very kind of alone and abandoned. But you know.
That would do it.
But a lot of people would feel that. I think a lot of people feel that. And I think in general, that's one of our, basic traumas as a being. I think a lot of beings have this feeling of being alone because those are the beings who are disconnected from the source. Right, now what is that? Because people say, what does connected to the source mean? And I really think that that is the same as being connected with your Lyran original self that was traumatized so many millions and millions of years ago. So far back in the mists of time that it was in the mists of time and nobody remembers it. But it seems that right at this cycle, I'm meeting lots of people who do remember it because I'm saying, hey, I got this feeling here. And everybody's going, oh, I know that feeling too. That's interesting. Really? You can go back on it? Really? Yes. You can go back all the way to the first time you ever felt it. Wow. Really? And then you can release it. All right. How do you do that? Well, you connect with the child that's feeling it because that's what you did. You disconnected from that child and you say, sorry. Sorry I left you there. Because you abandoned it there. You abandoned yourself. We all abandon ourselves. Anyway, so we give that little boy a hug. Or girl. depending what you were when you were a child. And then you bring them into your life, and thus you've reconnected. You've defragmented yourself. You know, we get fragmented with these traumatic episodes. And that's how we defragment out. I'm giving it away free. There you go. Learn, you know, figure it out. Have a session with me and I'll show you. And you can help somebody else. Cause it's so simple. Any child can do it. Anyone who could breathe and anyone can feel. Know anybody who doesn't breathe or feel?
Well, I know some that don't breathe.
It's true, isn't it? Yes. Meanwhile. So, listen, I need to blow my nose. Do you want to have a say? What's coming up for you? What's been coming up for you while I've been talking this?
Well, of course, you and I have spoken off air. And I have reconnected with an old Lyran friend. I noticed a guide come in last summer, and it just tripped me out because I've never had an experience where I just kind of noticed an energy in my aura like that. And it's very interesting. The Lyran connection is big for me right now. I relate to them far more than the Pleiadians. And, bringing all this up, you know, I'm so fascinated with our galactic history and the story of how it all unfolds, and very aware of the Dracos. Met one in person, in fact. This being was non-physical, but it was associated with another incarnate person's aura. Very interesting stuff, although it was a very benevolent one. Of course, Andrew Barsa says that of the 12 draconian races, only one of them is the real negatively oriented control ones. This was a very positive being that gave me a lot of information about the wars between the humans and Dracos from the Draco side of it. So are you back with us, or should I continue?
Well, that sounds... Hey, listen, tell us about the... I want to know... we've been at war for so long, it's nice to know the other side's feeling of it. And it's probably the same feeling, but a different story. So tell us a little bit about what they told you. Or tell us everything about what they told you. I'm fascinated.
Well, this was a while...
Getting a bad echo all of a sudden. This was quite a while ago that I had... What happened was... Okay, I'll just tell the story. So I'm going to see David Icke do his lecture. And he, you know, first of all, I met him in person prior to the lecture and noticed something odd about his aura. You know, you've heard me tell this story. So at any rate, so the being in his aura sees me see it, and just beams me like this laser beam, which is actually exactly how Preston Nichols describes how they communicate in the Montauk books. Contact from the Pleiades, is where he describes different alien species and kind of their behavior and stuff. And what it showed me was not, it didn't like give me words or anything. It was just this download. And it took me over a decade before I started processing it, believe it or not. Well, that probably isn't surprising to you. But so I started getting all these images of just seeing the wars and how they, you know, they were there. It was kind of like saying, hey, you know, we were at war too. And that's just what they thought they needed to do. Of course, they have a much different type of a consciousness, a very regimented, caste-oriented task, you know, and we see draconian measures here on Earth. I think that's all came from that. And it was just a lot of images of the battle and the wars and how they went from worlds different, you know, the Dracos it was kind of a conquer and expand, and they are the divine race. You know, they think that, you know, we see that with so many other, reflected in so many other peoples, but you know, they believe that they're the ones that are supposed to be here and that we're to be exterminated. Yeah, you can ask me questions about it if you want. It's
I haven't.
So exterminated is their way of dealing with stuff that doesn't agree with them. And as we know, this is what we call fascism. isn't it?
Right.
And so now we can see that our world is dominated by reptilian-based Nazi fascist, but without the same words or the same symbols. You know, we've got Nike and all these different corporates now. It's Nazism light, but it's still Nazi.
Yeah, very ritualistic.
Keep going.
I got a bad echo there a couple
yeah,
times.
Yeah, here's the thing, Keith. If you jump in when I say something, you're on my speaker, so you will hear yourself back. So give it a pause before you say anything, and I'll fade back out.
Okay, yes, we see it. You're exactly correct. I am total agreement with you. And it's so funny because it doesn't just go back to Nazi Germany or even to life on this planet. It goes back. I mean, the Liren, to my understanding, for our, at least our local part of this galaxy, the Lirens were the kind of the progenitor human race, and the diaspora you describe, how it seeded so many other planets, and it's a really big story. But we've been at war with the Draconian, the reptilians, forever, essentially, you know. And I think we're pretty much done with it. I think we're actually moving into a heart dimension. We've got tickets to the big show, to this shift that we're in. You know, you, yourself, and myself, and everybody here on this planet has the wonderful opportunity to really change. You really kind of don't have a choice. You can't sit on the fence anymore. But the Draconian mentality, very regimented. If you're not, you're part of the caste. You can't rise above. You know, if you're a soldier, you're a soldier. If you're a worker or whatever. And of course, there's so many interesting aspects to it, with the interaction of the various different races I'm trying to piece together myself. So I'm very interested in all that you're saying about this.
Okay. Well, look, we've got a caller, and, let's see who they are. And, caller, who are you and what planet are you from? 870. Hello.
I think I'm here on Earth. At least I believe so, you know. Anyway, JP, long time loving you, you know. You Pisces, I'm Pisces. You grew your hair from I guess from the same time I started growing my hair for some very same reason, you know.
What's your name?
Anyway, Daryl, my Stardust Man in chat.
Oh, hi, Stardust Man. How you doing, mate?
Anyway, something I've seen for years now, and I've only heard two shows where there was guests, and one was Rich Dolan, and then another one, I think, just here recently, that, earlier. It was the question about the, little, you were talking about the, you know, source. And then this little thing they call, well, this is a prison planet, you know. And the thing about that tower that's supposed to be, I thought it was Mile High, but, after Galileo talked about it being 5 miles high instead, you know, about catching our souls and sending them back here instead of going to source. Have you heard of that, and what's your opinion of that?
All right, you're talking about the soul capturing net. Is that right? That is on the moon? It's like, yeah. when people die, the idea is that when people die, their souls kind of float up, and the moon's going around, and it basically, scoops up. It's like a net, you know, like a butterfly net, and it scoops up all the souls as they float up out into space, and they're reprocessed, and the greys then come down and put them back in our bodies, having zapped them just before we go back in, so we can't remember who we are.
And would that be the purpose of why we only see one side of the moon? So that thing can always be there? Because if the moon's spinning around, I mean, in one cycle, Okay. Otherwise, it wouldn't be able to catch souls for half a cycle, right?
That's right.
And that why it is perfectly.
It's lockstep.
But the spin, yeah.
Yeah, it's lockstep with its rotation, so it always
right.
shows
so,
the
so
same
always,
face to
so
us.
So that thing always points toward us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, so there's no dark side of the moon, because it's dark half the time and light half the time, but there is a far side of the moon, and that's where all the Nazi
right.
bases and stuff are. And, you know, and apparently at the North Pole, there's the secret space program, the Sands of Time people.
Right. I always called it the backside of the moon. Uh-huh. I mean, you know, same thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But, there's another question I wanted to ask you, but I just get to my mind right now.
All right. Well, do you want to just hang back and we'll continue a bit more of our memories. Unless, have you heard any of my Lyran shows?
I don't think so.
Okay. Go to YouTube.
I mean, you'll have to refresh my memory.
All right. If you go to YouTube, you can hear it. It's called The Lyran Trauma. Just do a search for Lyran Trauma. Lyran.
Is that on your channel?
It's on my Studio 9 Jam channel, yeah. So
yeah.
It's about a month and a half ago. And, Darryl?
It's been a while since I've been on your channel. Longer than that, so I have to go back and visit that.
Listen, man, you got to have a binge out.
I'm going to need out.
You're going to have a binge out, Darryl, because there's some really good shows on that on my Studio 9 channel. That's, by the way, this is Studio, Studio, number 9. Jam, J-A-M. And it's called that because I used to have a music studio called Studio 9, and I used to have a regular jam every Friday night. And originally, it was in the deepest country of northern Scotland, and we had barely any, like, narrow band. We had modems and things like that, but we never got broadband in those days. I've since given up the studio in 2008. But the energy of it lives on, and it was an amazing training ground, and I met some amazing people there, including my friend today, Dean, who I've been doing this construction work with. So, meanwhile, where were we, Keith? We were on Mars?
Well, he asked the question,
yeah.
He asked the question about the moon and the 5 mile high shard that harvests souls and sends them back, and we don't get to escape. I think I first heard that from John Lear.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'd buy, I don't think I'd buy that. My gut feeling is, you know, there's something going on, there's like a stickiness, but I don't know, what do you think?
Well, I don't know. Darryl, what's your feeling about it? Does it feel like this is the real story of what happens? Does it feel like that's what happened to you?
No, I think it's like, there may be, you know how somebody says a story and then, probably 95% of it's wrong. I think that's a story, but I'm thinking maybe probably 65% of that is wrong.
Okay. So, well, I mean, there are lots of stories about what happened before. You see, the thing is that this thing, it happened to me. You know, I didn't, it was an experience in my gut, and it unfolded loads of memories. It wasn't like I was making it up. I didn't kind of create this event. It kind of happened to me. And it, like, everything just came back and started downloading. And since then, I've had loads of people coming to me, you know, on various, you know, by various media, including in person and, you know, accidental meetings and things, that all vibrate with this Lyran trauma and, a desire to heal it and perhaps even methods to heal it. And, you know, that's really the practical thing. We need to find a way of doing mass healing because this is hundreds of thousands of millions. Any thoughts?
Well, I definitely relate to it. It's striking a chord in me, my friend.
Well, yeah. And it's, you know, it would be no, surprise that, you know, you and I kind of vibrated together a long time ago. You know, you called.
I would say there's no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you called into my show like one of the first people that called in and, you know, just continued the conversation. So it's really good that we're getting to the point of it. What it's all about. And it's all about healing this. And the thing is that we've made mincemeat. We have made mincemeat of the reptilians, and the reptilians have made mincemeat of us. And so, as I say, you know, we are now a kind of hamburger of combination of all of them. And so the war is now inside our bodies. The war is between our lower self and our higher self, our soul and our personality, our spirit and our ego. The ego is the draconian, you know, basically. The ego is that part of you that's really hard on other people or even hard on yourself. Wow, an hour already. Don't go away. I'm going to make some tea with honey. I suggest you do the same. Oh, that is a much better cup of tea, I have to say. Lots of honey from a squeezy bottle. I am JP. I am on Studio B of Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, a listener-supported station. I'm also on Studio A at wallspiritradio.com, a subscriber-supported station. Just come along to the archives. We've got massive archives, and we keep them. Everything anyone's done, we've got it all. Please come along and support us by renting the amazing depth of all our stuff. And eventually we'll have a search facility. But we've got a forum. Come along to a forum and see. You can ask questions of people who have been around for a little bit longer and ask them, you know, where does such and such happen and all that stuff. So, and we also have a chat room at wallspiritradio.com/listen. So, yeah, that's Wall Spirit Radio. And so also Revolution Radio has various special offers. And in fact, we've got a push for getting a couple of really new, really cool servers, which are not, they're air-cooled. They don't have fans in them, so they're completely silent for the studio. I certainly could do. You can hear this in the background, can't you? Hey, listen. Hear all that? Yeah. Have this all the time. It does my head in. I'm trying to build up a quiet computer. It's really hard. They make a lot of noise. Meanwhile, here a long time ago. Didn't mean to blow that up. Sorry. We didn't mean to blow up your planet. And, yeah, so anyway, there was Maldek. So basically, they blew up Lyran planets. Pleiadians, who are really Lyrans, blew up a reptilian planet, which wasn't really a reptilian planet. They were just kind of hiding there and dominating everybody. But, you know, there was collateral damage. There's always been this kind of slight clumsiness, because the Pleiadians are angry. You know, we're angry and we're really sorry. You don't know what you did. They don't know what they did, because the internal experience for the Lyrans of being tortured, you know, they don't say anything, but they feel everything. You know, anybody was listening to, Adriarius or something. I can't pronounce his name. Audrey. He was the little boy. You know, in the famous, if you look, go to the Google and type in alien hybrids, you come to a web page, and, there's the two photographs of a female and what looks like a boy. And the boy is like 19 years old, but he looks about 8. And the woman, you know, looks like a kind of teenage punk, 7 feet 6 tall, and looking rather angry. But she never said a word because she was telepathic. So was the boy. Eventually, actually, I don't know what happened to her, and I think perhaps she may have been killed. Or perhaps returned to the Pleiades. But he's here. He stayed here. And he's been undercover. So, he was on Max Steele's show last week. And that was a complete third eye opener. To hear what he had to say is very interesting. He's very shy, like a lot of my, you know, delicate ET friend guests, you know, very shy, very quiet, but, we coax them out and, they say these amazing things and tell us these amazing stories that we all really need to know. And these are the people that have been silenced over the years. So now it's time for their voice to come out. So, we'll see more of, Audrey. We're gonna have him on some more. It's, difficult for these people. Really difficult. Especially with, you know, people who've gotten like a negative attitude towards everything and they think everything's a hoax and they're cynical about everything. You know, you do have to have a bit of a heart. Well, you have to have a lot of heart, but you know, start off with a bit of a heart. And if somebody says, I've been suffering all these years because I'm from another planet and I can feel everything that you're thinking, saying, and it's horrible, you know, just maybe consider their experience. And, you know, have some sense. Now, this is really what empathy is. Empathy is like, if I was in this position of being on another planet, I'd be in a, you know, and I have all these powers. And I can feel people's emotions and everybody's really angry and abrasive and horrible around me. You know, I wouldn't want to be with people either. Thoughts?
Well, when you're highly sensitive, as I'm sure you are and I know I am, it can be very difficult to be around people that are in a lot of denial and blame and fear. And that pretty much describes this planet.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly. And that is one of the reasons why they don't want us out there. Because we've all got we've basically got PTSD. And PTSD is really horrible for other people to be around. Really, I don't know if anybody's realized that, but it's like, you're the worst person because everybody shares their feelings. You know, it's not that I say, you know, I'm feeling this or that. You know, I make you feel the way I'm feeling. That's how I share my feelings. Parents and children do it and friends do it and, you know, non-friends. Everybody does it to each other. So when you stand up in front of somebody and you're feeling a particular way and you're thinking, oh, wow, they're really, what an awesome person. You know, I'm so awed by them that I almost can't speak to them. And they're standing there silently in front of you. Kind of staring at you. Consider that they actually be feeling the same feeling and thinking, oh wow, what an awesome person. I can't say anything because I'm, you know, they just awe me out. Sometimes that, I don't know if you've, has that ever happened to you, Keith? Daryl? Has that ever happened to you? You met someone and you were so awed by them and you couldn't speak to them, because you were so starstruck and they had the same attitude towards you. And you thought they were being aloof and standoffish, and they thought you were being aloof and standoffish, but actually you were just terrified to say anything. Go ahead, Daryl.
I was going to say, the only thing I remember of all these years, it's like back in the 70s, I was in the Army, and as far as being terrified, I remember I was laying on my bunk in the Army and, laying there and open my eyes and I see people in the room. The room we shared was four different people, right? And I remember laying on the side of my bed. This was like a day nap. So I had all my clothes on and everything, right? I'm laying on the edge of my bed. And then I opened my eyes and see people around, but I couldn't move. It's like It's like a dream you have, and then you can't move and you want to move. And then behind me, it just felt like this. It just felt like a really super deep, dark pit. And then I heard this sound that I've never, ever heard from any animal or anything in my life, like a deep, demonic growl. I mean, I don't know how to describe it, but I was so scared, and I tried to get off the bed, but I couldn't move, and all I could do is kind of like twitch my muscles, and I tried to yell out to my roommate, and I could see him walking back and forth, you know, so I basically, I just kept on twitching enough. I mean, I was laying right on the edge of my bed, just right on the edge of my bed. And I twitched enough until I fell off my bed, and then I was able to get up and be in the world. That it's like, it was like if I would have fell, rolled back instead of forward, but like I would have been in a different dimension is the way it felt. I don't know how to describe that. It was like really super freaky, you know? Boy.
Was that frightening?
Oh, it was beyond frightening. It was terrifying.
And so what happened next? How have you felt that was like, that was the thing you said, right, I'm out of here. I can't do this anymore. Was that a kind of defining moment for you?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was stepping out of context when I said that. It was definitely a moment that I never ever wanted to go into and never had been sentenced to.
Very interesting. Thoughts, Keith? You've experienced stuff like this.
Well, I think we're always reflecting each other. That's just, when I had a long time experience with somebody that I always considered that hated me, right? I really felt I was trying to be good, but I just thought she hated me. Well, it turns out that my thoughts were helping co-create that, right? And it was true, you know? When I kind of got past that, then it's like, okay, you know, we don't need to do that anymore.
So,
yeah. So I once I realized that I was helping create that. It wasn't just this person did that. In other words, I disciplined my own thoughts and said, you know, I realized that, you know, I just evolved more, and I got to the point where I saw what was happening. I saw the mechanics of how we reflect each other, and realized I was a participant in this. And if I just relax, breathe, let it out. Okay, just act normal. You know, don't get my hairs up on my back of the neck when I'm around this person. Just relax, breathe. It's okay. It's going to be okay. Well, sure enough, you know, all of a sudden that's all gone. You know, now we can just talk.
You know, well, here's the thing. There may be some past life karma between you that triggered that. You know, and it's all good, and it's all about how you feel about people. It's all about that. And the lessons that we have is all about how you feel and how you respond to that feeling.
In this case, there could be some current life stuff too.
Well, you know, you gotta just stop making it. That's, you see the idea of being harmless, you know, when they say be harmless, that means stop making karma.
I know, that's what I realized, and that's what I did. And so now it's mellow.
It's mellow, man. The nature of soul is love, brothers and sisters. Anyhow, so where were we? We'd been, God, is it really? Yeah. Right. So, let me just think. Yeah, that's right. I was thinking about thinking. See, thinking is something that
I'm thinking is not the question. Where are we? It's when are we?
Indeed. Okay. We could be still a billion years ago. We could be living in the past. I mean, call me old-fashioned. But But here's the thing. So we got all of these traumas that we've got. We've got traumas from the other beings that we've absorbed. We've got traumas from the beings who we were modified into, you know, all these hybrids that they did to us, all that hybridization. It just means that what happens is, you know, humans are like, we're shamanic. We are complete shamans. We're completely magical. So if something is placed in front of us that is ill, we will become ill like it in order, and then we fix the ill inside us and send back the vibration of healthy. That's how shamanism works. That's how shamanic healing works. If you look at the film, Paul, by about the alien who escapes from Area 51. When you see him do like two or three healings in the show, and one of the, you know, every time he does it, he takes on the disease, and then he returns back to his color. You know, so that's an example of shamanic healing. That's what people do. That's what empaths do. You know, people think, oh, I'm an empath. People think, oh, an empath, you're just a wimp, you know. No, it's not true. We're incredibly strong. Because we take on people's diseases and we battle with them and we conquer them. And then we send back their energy purified. That's how it works. That's how shamanic healing works. The next level of healing is where the person does it for themselves. But sometimes, you're just too weak to take it on. So that's why you go to a healer who can take it on for you, hold you in the light. And then when you go home, you have to carry that light with you. And it usually doesn't, so you go back. Daryl.
When you say you send them back to where?
You send the energy back. Oh, you basically, look, if you've got, say, a frequency that is, back, what?
I mean, back to the being or back to... Or what?
No. It's an energy. It's an energy of ill health or dis-ease. So you pick that up from the client, you know, the shaman as a client, right? Let's call it a client. The bad words, you know, words are hard. But anyway, the shaman takes the client and absorbs their diseased energy. This is not something conscious. It just happens. And they can then feel it in their body. You can feel these kind of gurglings and gnawings and backaches and all this stuff. You can feel it in your body. And by using your breath, you crunch it back down and you conquer it. It no longer becomes overwhelming. You get a handle on what the discordancy is. It's all about accord and discord. Right. Everything's flashing on my screen. Go ahead.
In other words, you tell them, you're speaking for someone else to the entity, the entity is, like directly connected to its source, where that entity comes from, right?
And so this reason somebody's ill is because they're not connected to their source. That's why they're ill, because if somebody's connected to their source, they're not ill. Do you understand?
No, I'm talking about the entity.
What entity?
Not the person, but the whatever you want to call it, that is in their body, right? Messing them up.
It doesn't have to be something that is from the outside that is invading their... here's the thing, right? Here's the thing. We all too easily picture germs and bacteria crawling around our body making us ill. Isn't actually not true. Yeah. But for the sake of argument, on a simplistic basis, that's what happens. But the dis-ease, the discordancy is literally a frequency interference. Now, you might say, yeah, but I was poisoned. Or, yeah, but somebody shot me with the gun. Or, you know, this or that. But in the end, it's all frequency, you know. And frequency can kill you, yes. You know, same as, you know, being, having a large 5-ton weight dropped on you from a height. You know, from no height at all, you know, 5 tons is enough to kill you. You know, so it's all okay. See, why I'm having so much difficulty explaining this is because it's something that almost cannot be explained, because you only explain something to somebody with a mindset that can be explained, that has the necessary constructs and models in their mind to explain it to. But if you're talking about a process that is non-physical, a process that is more energetic, it's almost like you're talking about software rather than hardware. Does that make sense, Daryl?
Sorry, I was outside and the neighbor came up to me and I was talking to him, so I didn't hear any questions sitting in.
Oh. It's very difficult to explain to somebody about the true nature of healing if you don't understand, because the whole allopathic teaching is wrong. It's just completely wrong, you know. It's like you can't cut a body into bits and make it work again. Frankenstein doesn't work.
Right. If you don't understand the basics, how can you understand the complexity?
Well, it's and the other thing is that if you're stuck in the body parts, you don't see the system.
Yeah.
All right. And a healer, as opposed to a doctor sees the body parts. A healer sees the system. Let's look at it that way.
I think a very good example would be the way the government operates. Particularly what I'm talking about is like the secret government. You know, they compartmentalize. I mean, I don't know how to pronounce that before way wrong. But anyway, you know what I'm talking about. You know, they have all these different people working on this project, but they only see this one part of the project they're working on. They don't not know the whole. And without knowing the whole, what does a little bit mean, you know?
The word is compartmentalization. And that is what the draconians have done to our brains, so that we think that 10% of us is us. What we identify. The identity. You know, is really only 10% of us. So it's very much like the powers that be. They're only 10% of the population. Or 1%. 0.1%. You know,
yeah,
it goes like that. So there's an analogy there of the, of this group thinking that it's humanity and that it can speak for humanity. But your body, right? So this is the true nature of disease. The disease is the conflict between these two parts, between the 10% of us and the 90% of us. 90% is our body, right? Look at us. You know, 90% of you is not your head, right? 10% of you is your head. Yeah? Everybody thinks in the head and thinks that their head is, that's everything. Right? But we've got hearts, we've got livers, you know, we've got all these things. Schmeckles. You know? We've got all these things, and they all have a consciousness. And if you don't take them into account, and if you don't let them speak, they will try to speak to you in the language that they can only speak to you in. And that language is illness. Do you see what I'm saying now?
Yeah. No, the one thing I worry about is, well, that's what I worry about. It's just like, it's going to happen. And the thing that I just, you know, when you, Let's say there's an event that's going to happen, and no, 90% of people are going to die.
I'd say, Daryl, can you speak up a bit, please, and speak closer to the mic?
Okay. Well, all I was going to say is, you know, the one thing that saddens me. One thing that saddens me is, you know, like, for example, you know, when something happens, that, you know, something in the future is going to happen, and you know, like 90% of the people are going to pass, and but there's nothing you can do about it. So, you know, for example, you know, at work, one person that I saw that was, you know, like stuck in a rut, believing this one way, and I tried to, I mean, if I would speak the truth to them, they just throw their head up in the air and just, you know, walk away. But I mean, I try to take a different approach and do something like very, very, very subtle and what I consider very, very mild, and which, you know, they took real easy, but they just said, oh, I think they're just lying to us, you know. And it was like barely the truth, you know. And the thing that I'm saddened to see in the future is that people are really super, super, super devoted in religion. When the day comes that the truth opens up and it's plain in sight and everyone acknowledges it, they still will now acknowledge it and will commit suicide, you know. That's what saddens me. Over.
The thing is, it's all about your self-responsibility. And again, the idea that anybody can actually heal another person. That's not really true either, is it? The only true healing is your healing of yourself. And that's why I say when you go to a shaman, it will go away unless you hold the frequency. You have to hold the new frequency of healing. Otherwise, you become the back old frequency of illness. You know, it's up to you. You created it. You have to change it. You know, illness is your own responsibility, really. And
yeah, it's kind of like the placebo effect, you know. I mean, they don't need that pill. All they need to is believe in that pill, right?
Over. Belief is not. I don't know about belief. It's, you see, the thing about placebo is your scientist who's conducting this experiment and just gives somebody a placebo pill and says, this will make you better or this will make you feel this. Guess what? They're putting that energy into the pills. You see? So placebo isn't placebo.
It's actually
shamanic healing that is going on, and everybody's thinking, oh, what a kind of, what a mundane process this has to be. Yeah. It's not, it's quite, you know, magic. I really hate it when people talk about the placebo effect, because it's not, it's looking at the truth in a completely wrong way and attributing it to something else that it isn't what it is. Do you see? You know, people think the pills make you better. No, it's the mind of the healer that does the better. Makes an influence. Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, they may give them a sugar pill, but if that person swallowing that sugar pill, if they have enough belief in them that sugar pill is going to cure them, it will cure them.
Yeah, you know, you don't even need the belief, mate.
It's not the pill,
what I'm saying.
It's their belief.
No, not even that. I'm saying that not even their belief needs to be engaged. They can, you know, they can just not disbelieve it. That's good enough. But I'm saying that, you know, just like the double slit experiment, it's all to do with the intent of the experimenter or the healer or the doctor or whatever.
Changes the experiment.
Yeah. But actually what do they call it? You know when the priest blesses the thing and it becomes the body of Jesus? You know, actually, transubstantiation. There is a form of transubstantiation that makes those pills actually become healing pills. And when he says these are plain and these are not, you know, and then, you know, he's just like leaving them neutral. But you can actually create, that's what homeopathy is sugar pills, right? They're sugar pills that are charged with an intent.
Okay, here's my question. Is if they put that belief in those pills, and let's say somebody else just happens that does not believe and just runs by and sees those pills and grabs them and swallows them, is there enough belief in those pills that they will be cured? Or do they?
It's not about belief. This doesn't, I'm saying this is not working because of belief. I'm saying that the placebo effect, you know, I'm going out on a limb here, and you can give me clinical trialing and all this stuff, but there are aspects, events and things and times that clinical trials, it's a Schrodinger's cat. The intent of somebody doing clinical trials is to make money. You understand? So it's not to prove a point, it's to make money. So they'll find the thing that'll make the money. So whatever makes the money, so they'll stop the placebo pills working. But if there is an experimenter who is a true human being, has heart, and you say to somebody, this pill will make you better, or this pill will cure your cold, it's, even if the person does not believe it, because the intention has gone into the pill, The sugar crystals, they're crystals. Remember, crystals holds information. The sugar crystals will hold that program and transmit the program to the person taking the pills. Energetically. So when I'm saying the placebo effect is not what you think it is, I'm saying it's not what you think it is. Do you understand?
Right. Okay, here's something I'm really wondering about. I mean, you saw the Superman movies in the past, and he went up like, it looks like North Pole and this wintery and whatever, and he went up there and there's all these crystals and had all this information in there that he gathered. There's a whole bunch of stories out there of why they went, I mean, the 9/11, all that crap, you know, and why they went to, Afghanistan and Iraq. What I'm really seriously wondering, ancient technology in Iraq, they said they went after, and that was the whole reason they did the war, so they could justify themselves in going in there and getting that technology. But I'm really wondering if there were crystals there that held ancient technology that was so far beyond what we have now, and could that have been their goal to go there to get that technology?
Very likely. Not only that, I mean, there's loads of layers. You know, Afghanistan is a great place for growing hash. It's a great place for growing opium. It's a great place for mining lithium. There's probably some oil, but it's a treacherous place, and you have to be nice to the locals.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, there was multiple reasons for them going there. Yeah. I mean, so they could step a foot in Afghanistan,
Daryl, we got half an hour left. You're talking about the ancient technology, the Stargate technologies, yeah?
Yes.
All right. Beyond
what we have nowadays, and they want it really bad, and therefore they're willing to wage a false war to be able to go over there and obtain that. Over.
And what do you think they're for? Keep going with your thought. Take it all the way. Take it all the way. Say, I think so-and-so is doing so-and-so with so-and-so. Just name names.
Right.
Kick butt. Makes it,
Their main game is they wanted to, they realized, they had this great power. You could use a great power for good or for bad. And they wanted it as a weapon. The only reason they went after it is they wanted a superior weapon that nobody had a chance to stand up in front of. Over.
And keep going. What's your feeling?
My feeling, my deepest, darkest feeling that makes my hairs on my legs and everything stand up and twitches. Is our government is, well, actually, I think it's not even us. I think it may have been, people say, Germany has infiltrated and taken us over. No, I think it's like a really evil side of aliens, like.
All right. Yeah. Okay. I hear where you're going. So let's just, all right. Let's see if, cause this has been my quest over the last 5 years, you know, who is running this planet? You know, is David Icke right? What is this all about? You know, and it turns out in the end, you know, that everybody's right. Okay. So let's just start with, okay. So those who think, that evil is being played out, on our world, yeah. Is CERN something to do with it? Yes. Are the Catholics anything to do with it? Yes, it's the Roman Empire. Just got holy in front of it. Yeah, I didn't think anybody would fell for that, but they did. Anyway, so yes, to do with the Catholics. Is it to do with the Mafia? Yes, it's to do with the Mafia. Is it to do with P2? Yes. Is it to do with the Dark Lodges? Yes. Is it to do with, is it to do with satanic Jews? Yes. Same thing. You know, there are satanic Catholics and there are satanic Jews and there are satanic, and there are divine people as well, all through all religions, you know. The highest and lowest meet. So, is it to do with, demons? Yes. Is it to do with, reptilian demons? Yes. Is it to do with, artificially induced, reptilian demons who work through the Jesuits, in through the, infiltration of the priesthood to steal children and, sacrifice them and eat them and sell them and trade them and do everything that we regard as the most evil thing under the name of God. That's evil. All right. So this is where it's all at. As far as I can see, it starts at the AI and works its way up. Does that make sense? Does that answer any questions?
Yes, that totally makes sense. But you mentioned one word that brings up a totally different subject. It's like
what word?
The movie Groundhog Day, you know, and the butterfly effect and movies like that. What's your opinion of CERN? You know, they did that thing and they kicked it and then it's like, it messed up everything, and then it caused us being in a time that we keep on going through, maybe years or millennium of years or whatever, and we keep on looping. I mean, you've heard that before, right?
Well, I've heard the story that it's been going on for a long, 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 long time. And that the book is, yeah, that 50 years has been repeating ever since the time of Jesus. So the idea that Dark Lodge has been using magical spells and eventually technology to keep the time in a loop so that we never move forward into the new age, which should have happened, you know, hundreds of years back. That's one theory I've heard. Is that what you're talking about?
Speak closer
to the mic.
Yeah, I mean, like, first of all, they didn't even understand what they were playing with. Just like the Philadelphia experiment, they did not understand what they were playing with. And it was too late by the time it happened, you know. And then, like they say in CERN, you know, they triggered an event that just keeps on happening time and time again. And I hope it's like the movies, you know, and just one person realizes it and tries to change it a little bit. There's a movie called Die and Live or something like that where there's a soldier, he gets killed in combat. And then the second he dies, he wakes back up at a certain time, just like Groundhog Day, you know? My opinion.
I don't know. Is that 8 minutes? I can't remember which one that is.
Live, Lie, and Die, or something like that. I can't remember.
I have no idea. I haven't seen it. Keith, any extra layers of that evil ladder that I was speaking about that you're aware of? You know, we just need to name it and put it in its place. And this is who's controlling who is, where it is in the hierarchy of the rung of the ladder of like where it starts with the bully around the corner and ends up with the Alpha Draconians and then ends up with the AI that is driving them.
I think if, even if we do the repeat thing over and over again, I think that eventually when we have enough people on this earth that is full love and love one another, they'll break that time continuum, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, we just need to let go of the programming and, you know, it's like being able to shut down your computer and shut all the applications down before you reboot and it says, oh, sorry, we broke. And so they bring it all back again. It's like having Firefox remember your browsing history after you switched off the computer. It does that. So,
I think the only thing that's going to shut that program down is once everyone has enough love in their heart that, you know, like in the Bible, love your enemy, you know.
Daryl, here's the thing. No. It's not going to be everyone. And I'll tell you why. No, it's going to be not be everyone. And this is the problem. This is why humanity is so screwed. Right? Because not everyone is loving. Right? The only people who are going to survive this are those who are loving. That's it. If you're in your heart and you are caring for other people, you at least give a damn about someone or something, then you'll survive. Anybody else is going to be swept away because there's going to be like an enormous magnet for heartlessness. And it's going to everybody up.
Actually, the way I think everything's going to happen, okay, this is what I believe. I think the way everything is and the way things are going to happen is you have a whole bunch of beings here in this planet that has a really wonderful, loving heart. Then you have some that are like totally opposite. And I think every so often, I mean, maybe millions or billions of years, every once in a while, which I think we're coming really close to happening again, is all those people, and it kind of fits in with the words of the Bible about, the people like, waking up and all of a sudden all these people disappear. Basically, I think of it as like a phase shift. All those people and the planet, Earth, Mother Earth, and those people, it does like a phase shift. Basically, like in those movies when you see the person lying on the table and you see the ghost or his spirit or whatever rising up and leaving the body. It's exactly like that. Like if you're like way out in space and you're a high enough spirit to be able to see lower dimensions and look down upon us, and you see this world phase shifting, like a ghost planet separating, going a different direction, along with those wonderful souls, then all the souls that didn't graduate, just stay on the old planet. That makes sense?
Yeah, and they'll think that we've all died. So, and good riddance, because they'll just have a nicer life, because there won't be so many heart-based people around, so they can go around and bully everybody, and everybody's going to be, and they can go through the blender once again. Going to die, 100,000 years, 200,000 years. They will go through the blender, and eventually some of them will rise to the top, and the same process happens. So, however,
the problem here is that back in like around 2000, there was a little video on the internet. It's about a frog in a blender, and you were able to push the buttons. And basically, it's the same thing about a frog being a pot of cold water and slowly heating it up, in the blender, you hit each speed, and he just make these smart-ass remarks, about, that's all you can do, and then you get to a certain speed, and then it chops them up, It's just like they don't realize what's going on, you know, until it's too late.
Okay, so the frog in the blender. Thank you for that image. Keith, do you want to bring us out of this kind of slightly traumatic track moment with some of your great insight and humor? No, you're not there. You've wandered away from the thing. Oh, well, never mind. So Daryl, look, we got to have some, like, really, it's all about the lovingness and being in the harmony and being in the feeling of things. Because all the thinking of things is out of the heart. So, here's the thing, right? Because here's something, right? I hear a lot of people say things that start with the words, if we all, ... You understand?
Right.
I don't want to hear that. There's no if. He has to say, I now am this. Anybody with me? And that's what we call initiative. And making a stand.
Exactly.
And standing up. And there's no more doubt. And there's no more blah, 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 blah. There's no more stuttering or stammering, or it is a deep breath. It is, I'm doing this, and this is what I'm doing. And I'm doing this until I'm not doing it anymore, all right? And nothing anybody can say, not my family, not my priest, not my doctor, is going to stop me from doing what I'm going to do, because I've decided that I'm going to do it.
Right.
Now, how empowered is that?
I understand what you're saying. For example, in my youth, I was the type of person that, most people would avoid me. You know, it's like I was not a very good person, right? And then it kind of changed all at once, but still there. There was a long ways to go, and over the years, I realized when I do something bad, I said, no, I shouldn't have done that, and then so I'm really, really trying to be a good person, and then somebody just pushes the right buttons, and you go off, and then later on, I think, oh man, I did so wrong. I just.
All right. This
it's a learning experience.
Daryl, this is what's called triggered, and you have just been in a little bubble world, haven't you? Because you're no longer present. When you're triggered, you're no longer present, and you're reliving a trauma.
Yeah, it's like,
yeah.
I mean, but also, the way you could explain it, like schizophrenia, you become someone else in that instant, that instantaneous reaction. And then later on, you see yourself as the way you were and think to yourself, oh, that's not the person I want to be, and you feel really bad about the reaction that you did, Over.
It's all about your perspective, really. How you see something, how you view things is actually an indicator of your level of evolution. The more things bother you, the more you're programmed and the less you're evolved. Because we have to evolve out of our programming. It's the only way out. And evolution involves forgiveness, strangely enough. Evolution involves becoming meek, becoming vulnerable. You guys are not going to like it. Women get it. They can be strong and vulnerable. Guys think vulnerable is weak because that's reptilian, right? Guys are influenced by that snake really badly, It's one of the problems of the world is that men are ruled by their snake guys. And their avocados. But we have a snake, you know, in our body, all of us. It's called our spine. Yeah. And that's what continually sabotages our evolution. Can you imagine that? They call it the enemy within. You know, the old Gnostics and esoterics, they know about this stuff.
The tricky part is ignoring that snake and knowing what you should do instead of listening to what that snake telling you to do, right?
I can't hear you. Say it again.
I said the tricky part is ignoring that snake telling you what you should do and you knowing what you actually...
No, you don't ignore the snake. You tell the snake, thank you very much for your contribution. Now sit down. Watch.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
In other words, telling that snake, leave me alone. I know what I need to do.
Exactly.
I'm not doing what you want me to do.
You don't even need to get pissed about it. Here's the thing, you know, sit down and watch. Like a teacher. Because the snake is like a little child. It's unevolved. It needs to learn about evolution. And until we can do that, we can't leave the planet. Until we can control that draconian. See, the draconian has been, what's the word? Quarantined on this planet ever since Maldek. You know, we're stuck in here slicing each other to bits all the time.
So, once you accomplish that, then that, 5 mile high tower on the moon has no effect on you?
Well, you then, take control over your soul and where it's going. Yeah. And you say,
exactly.
Where, you know, when I die, you know, you practice, you know, Simon Parks has been talking about that, you know, when you go to sleep at night, you say, I want to go home, or I want to go to wherever you want to go to. I want to go to please. I want to do this. And you do this every night and you practice, you know. So it's a bit like, when you do helicopter training and they practice on, you know, going down the rope and things like that. And you never normally have to go down the rope, but just in case you need to go down the rope, you have to learn how to go down the rope. It's, you know, it's a technique. So once you've done that a few times, it's in your body, it's in your cells. You do it once a week. You do it every day. You know, and you can skim up and down the rope, up the ladder.
Okay. Now, would that be considered what people, what you've been infused with the idea of the word junk DNA. So do you think that may be what junk DNA is actually the DNA that makes you remember who you were before you reincarnated, and every time you ever reincarnated for all those lives you've been before?
You know, they say we only know 10% of everything. You know, there's only 10%. I keep going, it's this 90-10 divide. It's the same thing. So yes, what they call junk DNA and what they call real, you know, the good stuff. The junk DNA is a horrible name that they put on it for all of our superpowers. But it also holds our traumas. Or it's blocked by the traumas that has then exacerbated by the programming that they've laid upon the traumas that we've had. It's a bit like somebody put a hole in our side and then they put a hook inside that hole. So it never heals. Okay, and every so often they give a tug on it. So they keep us down. That's how they hurt people.
That's kind of what I was getting to earlier. Like, if you believe, strong enough, and I mean, not far beyond belief, feel, you know, if you not feel but be, you be what in your mind, you be what you want it to be, and that is part of the what they so-called junk DNA abilities that we have, if we be strong enough, being in way beyond believing, we have to be, not believing, but we have to be, and then we can do whatever we be.
All right, you've got a problem with language, right? All right, and we've all got a problem with language, because language is the problem. Yeah, and I think Sean has said on many occasions that that our language is viewed as a mental virus in some sections of the galaxy. You know, that because
exactly.
Of, you see, look, just a minute. The way you're expressing yourself has made it really difficult for you to understand things. Also, the way you express yourself makes it difficult for other people to understand you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. But one thing I want to say on that regard is the best example I've ever seen on explaining this is when Kerry Cassidy and Bill Ryan, when they went their different ways, and then Bill Ryan on his Avalon website, it was not very long after they went their different ways, and Bill Ryan he interviewed this chief from South Africa, or I can't remember exactly where it was, but he was.
That's it. We're out of time. You should have said it faster. All right. Thanks very much. So much, Keith. Thanks very much, Stardust Man, Daryl. And we'll be back next week. Well, I'll see you on Thursday on Strange Universe. Thank you very much. This has been JP on Wolf Spirit Radio for Revolution Radio. Good night.
We can speak with our minds.